Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to episode 23 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoden. After a, I think, what was called by me and many other people, season-defining series. That may not actually be the case, but things did not go as they might have for the Blue Jays. Stoden, how are you feeling off that Yankee series?
I mean, obviously not great. Season-defining, yeah, there were definitely a lot of the warts that we've seen all season from the Blue Jays in that series. A lot of the good stuff too, but just not enough of it. And a tough opponent with some guys in particular, Judge and Stanton. Judge on Thursday night with just effortless power, just disgustingly effortless. Just flicking his wrists, it feels like, and the ball goes 500 feet. But yeah, they are. They're a good team, the stupid Yankees, and so are the Blue Jays, but they are not in a great spot with not a lot of time to rectify it.
Yeah, obviously they're not in a great spot, right? You can do it. You can do it objectively. You can go with the stat, the playoff odds. I think 13.6% is what I saw at Fangraphs today as of recording. But like, there's a scenario where they're in a playoff spot even at the end of tonight. Like, that's how close they are. And I'm not saying that's going to happen. Like, asking, the Red Sox and Mariners to both drop a game and the Blue Jays to win, that's unlikely. All those things are going to come together at once. But the idea that they could sweep a series against the Orioles and neither of the other two teams will achieve a sweep is not that outlandish. Like, I think that you can fall into the trap of, because a situation is easy to envision, you overestimate how likely it actually is. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've criticized Charlie Montoyo of doing as a manager, is kind of seeing very specific scenarios and managing to them. So that's kind of what we're doing with our expectations by saying that. But I would have thought coming into the Yankee series, my expectation was if they did not win, they were straight up dead. And they're not dead by any means.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's very easy to take the Orioles for granted, as the reason that they're here is that the Red Sox couldn't take advantage of the Orioles. So that is I think worth noting. Obviously, Baltimore's got some guys who can hit the ball. I don't think they have a lot of guys that can pitch the ball. But it's still there. It is just it's tougher to envision, and yet, as you say, it could as early as tonight here on Friday move into their favor. We'll see. It's worth watching. And, had the Red Sox not lost to the Orioles yesterday, it would have been less worth watching, I think.
Yeah, it would have been sort of praying for a miracle at that point. Yeah. Like, are the Red Sox going to lose a series to the Nationals and you sweep the Orioles and the Mariners don't really do anything? That all could have happened, but that's an even narrower scenario that you're creating in your mind to do kind of mental gymnastics to think the Blue Jays can get in. I don't think the mental gymnastics are that ridiculous right now. Now, again, still much less likely to happen than any other scenario. And the Mariners are kind of an annoyance right now because I think for a long time you could just say, well, the Mariners are kind of shitty and eventually that's got to catch up to them. But when there's only three games left in the season, the whole fraud, not fraud spectrum becomes less relevant because, you can win any couple games regardless of how fraudulent you are. And the The Los Angeles Angels are a truly pitiful team. I was
they are. Yeah.
I was going through their roster today because I was writing a piece on sort of like who are some out-of-town heroes the Blue Jays can maybe rely on over the next weekend, and we can talk about that a little bit too. But I was going to the Angels lineup to be like, okay, who on the Angels might do something? Might be the Ryan Mountcastle of last night, but for the Angels. And it's Ohtani, and that's that's it. That is really it. Like, there's nothing going on in that. You know, Jared Walsh is okay. He made my list barely, but there's not a lot.
You had to pick somebody.
Yeah, I needed another hitter. Jared Walsh fit the bill, but there's not a lot going on in that lineup. But now you can flip over to the Mariners, and there's not that much going up in that lineup as well. But the Angels are a tough team to be like, oh, this is the hope, obviously, other than Ohtani, because he's the guy who can do, you know, hit two triples in a game or hit, you know, three home runs and steal a base and all this stuff. He's not pitching anymore, but even with his bat, he's a, you know, he's a difference maker. He's a guy who can win a game almost by himself. But yeah, the Angels are a tough team to count on. The Nationals are as well. Obviously, they were totally gutted at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
But the Juan Soto factor is even a step above Ohtani. Like, Soto, I'd say, is the best hitter in the game at this particular second in time. So it is, he's someone who could produce a moment or two that gives the Red Sox pause. If, you know, if the Orioles can do it, then a Juan Soto-led team can do it.
I think, I think that's absolutely true. You know, the Jays, did they split? I was just looking it up. Did they split with the Angels in August? You know, the Angels can win baseball games. And the Mariners, like you say, they're very, very frustrating. I called them terrible to somebody yesterday because they did not like my use of the word fraud. And then I kind of thought of it. I mean, that run differential, which has sort of been the big thing, it's creeping upwards. I was looking, you know, today I just wrote a piece about, you know, about last night's game and about what's coming here on Friday. Marco Gonzalez is going for the Mariners, which is, you know, not great news for the Blue Jays. He had a terrible first half, but has, I think his ERA in the second half is like 2.88. Like, he has been back to the guy who's the best pitcher on the Mariners, which is gave me pause about the fraud narrative, which could very well be true. But I think they obviously have been playing better in the second half. I haven't looked it up, but I would suspect that's the case. And they're, you know, obviously doing well and lingering around. You know, I wouldn't put money on them at this point. I certainly wouldn't put the money on them to go very far in the playoffs if they get there. But they are effective spoilers, and the, you know, the Blue Jays are indeed being spoiled by them at the moment.
Yeah, and they may well be spoiled by the Orioles too, as effective as the, you know, the Orioles have kept the Blue Jays in this race in some ways, and the games they took against the Yankees and then now the Red Sox. So, you know, I'm sure Blue Jays fans will be furious if the Orioles take a game from them here and that's what ruins their season. But, you know, they wouldn't be here without the heroic efforts of the Baltimore Orioles. So, you know, let's not put too much antagonism towards them, because, yeah, that team has helped place them there. When we think about the series with the Yankees, is there anything that makes you, I don't know, I think it's easy to look at three baseball games and then kind of conjure a grand narrative of like, this showed what was wrong with the Blue Jays, or this was emblematic of why they couldn't quite get there. Did you have any feelings of that nature with this series, or was it kind of you know, you play a good team, usually you either win two or win one, and this time they won one?
There's a little bit of that, but I think maybe not just from this series, but overall, especially over the, you know, the last you know, after the big winning streak, how things have fallen apart on them a little bit. I just keep coming back to the bullpen, right? Has been just the problem all along. And even though they have now sort of, you know, the cream has risen to the top, and they, you know, Nate Pearson was great last night. Julian Merriweather looks like a guy who, if there was a month of the season left, he would be, you know, ratcheting up the leverage. But it's so tough. You know, last night, you know, Robbie Ray, I wrote a little bit about it. I don't know about, you know, the early hook could have come for him. You know, if the Jays had a Rays-like bullpen and a more Rays-like manager, perhaps they would have been a little bit more proactive in that sixth inning, which could have averted disaster. But they do not. And more, I think it's more on the bullpen than the manager. You know, Ray has been real bad third time through the order, which, you know, they should know. But, you know, you had Simber, who'd pitched two nights before. You had Meza, who'd blown a save. He's a lefty with Judge and Stanton coming up, not really an option. Jordan Romano felt something in his arm. He still got, you know, pitched the day before. I don't know if it was a save situation or not, but he, you know, he's also your closer. You're kind of saving him around, saving him. So you eventually, you know, you have Trevor Richards, but, you know, there's not much else in the bullpen that you really want to turn it over to when you have your guy in a Cy Young race on the hill. And that, as we've seen, and they've done well with it and not been burned as much as they could have, but they definitely, you know, compared to the start of the season, especially as, you know, as the bullpen just sort of sorted itself out and as the stakes got a bit higher, you know, we're pushing starting pitchers a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And it bit them in this one. And I think they did get away with it a lot, but that's, you know, that's something that maybe wouldn't have to bite a team if they have more than four guys they can trust, several of whom, you know, were just pitching and are pitching every day.
Yeah, I mean, Simber's the perfect guy for that spot in theory. You know, the way he keeps the ball in the park, the way he makes it hard on right-handed hitters. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there's a lot of criticism coming for this particular moment. I understand why. Like, the third time to the order thing is interesting because I feel like it's something I've been thinking about and talking about for a while, but most people have not been thinking about and been putting to the side because they're like, Robbie Ray's amazing. But then when something goes wrong, then it's like, oh, they should have talked about this all along. But they've been pushing Ray, like you said, for quite a while, and they've been living dangerously with that. And it's because of what's in the bullpen. It's because of what is the viable alternative. I think if you asked, you know, Charlie Montoya, would you like to pull Ray in that spot? I think in a vacuum, the answer would be yes for him and for the team, like in terms of the third time to the order, in terms of the lefty against these two big righties. I think that that's pretty clear, but the problem was that the alternatives just weren't there, the alternatives they trusted. Now, should they have trusted Nate Pearson more? Sure, the way he pitched, he justified that later, but coming into that...
But not before,
yeah. But coming into that outing, you know, hindsight's 20/20 on that, although I did like Pearson coming into the series because of how well he's done against right-handers, even when he struggled. But still, I don't know. I think if I was sitting in that manager's chair, I probably... You know, I would have left him to start the inning. I would have the home run from Rizzo. I probably would have left him for one more hitter, and then he would have given up the home run to Judge, and then I probably would have pulled him then. And then I still would have lost. So, like,
well, yes.
Like, I think that he, you know, because the bullpen has been shaky, because of the factors you talked about there, and because of how great a season Ray's having, leaving him in for one batter past Rizzo, that's not a brutal offense as far as I'm concerned, and it didn't go their way. I probably would have gotten rid of him at that point, but ultimately those runs didn't matter anyway, so I don't understand why people are kind of obsessed with relitigating it.
Yeah, it's true. Well, and I guess, well, the thing is, it's just they didn't even have, I mean, Richards got up. I wrote about this in the piece that we're recording like literally moments after it was published, so you haven't read it. But I timed it from the time that Dan Shulman is like, oh, Pete Walker's coming out. It looks like somebody's getting ready in the bullpen. That was the meeting after the Judge home run. And it was like, it was less than 2 minutes from that moment when Richards hadn't even started throwing yet. A few seconds later, Shulman notes that there's Richards throwing. It was less than 2 minutes from then until Stanton is walking to first base. So I don't even know if that was enough time. That's not a lot of time to get a guy warmed up. So had that been happening before that, maybe you could have avoided the Torres home run. But again, like you say, they still would have lost. But it would have, you know, it would have changed everything, I think, obviously. Also, it would have changed everything as if that ball from Vlad had gone one inch higher and not bounced back into play. And also it would have changed everything is, you know, the call from Marvin Hudson on ball two to Rizzo, which sort of changed that at bat. You know, that's the sport. That's the sport we're watching and loving. And that's why it's so intense and horrible at this time of year when it's like, oh, they just got to sweep the Orioles. It's like, well, dumb stuff happens all the damn time. And that's sort of why 162 games filters out a lot of that noise.
But not all of it.
Not all of it. Not all of it. The Mariners do exist. It's a weird spot. It's not a great spot, but it is at least, you know, an excuse to watch another Mariners game.
I do find it weird. Like you mentioned the call in the Rizzo bat, and you're right about that, but I find it interesting how much people want to reconstruct a bat. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's unique to the Blue Jays fan base, but I think back to the Ben Revere at bat in 2015 and the bad call, and he would have had 3-1, and instead he had 2-2. He's like, are you that confident that Ben Revere would have done something 3-1 against Wade Davis? Like, Ben Revere's not a great hitter. And then there's the flip side of this. It's like, Rizzo's really good. Are we 100% confident that if that strike call doesn't happen, it's going to be a good outcome for Ray? Like, I understand how the odds change on those things, but it feels like people treat them as certainties that, like, oh, this one strike or ball went the wrong way, therefore it changed everything. And it might have, but it also might not have. Like, we never know those things. And also, bad calls happen all the time. Like, Springer had a call where he should have been struck out. I don't know. It seems like a bit of a selective memory exercise when we get deep enough into the balls and strikes. And I know in the Rays series in particular, there were some umpire, like those umpire scorecards came out and they really favored the Rays. It can happen, but, you know, people are just looking to place blame around. And the reality is they lost this game relatively handily. And the Yankees were the better team in that game. And that's harder to accept sometimes. But I think that's kind of what it was. You know, you're right. Vladdy might have had another run put on the board. Maybe that affects how they manage the next inning, yada, yada, yada. But it's hard to watch this series and be like, oh, the Blue Jays got jobbed. They were the better team.
No, that's totally true. Though, you know, the umpire stuff, you're right. And I think, you know, the reconstructing of at-bats and assuming things after the fact is a bit much. But you know, you can look at the numbers of what, you know, where what hitters do or what specific hitters do when the count's 1-1 versus 2-0. You know, there is an advantage there, but it's, you know, it's whatever percentage points it is, it's not as huge as, like, that does change everything. There's still plenty of opportunity to screw up an at-bat when you get to 2-0, or to get a guy out when you get him at 2-0.
That was Higashioka getting that 0-2 hit. Guy's a monster.
Yeah, that's just that whole thing is absurd too. But, you know, ultimately you're right. Yeah, I don't the Jays cannot feel aggrieved by this series, as unfortunate as it was. As much as the Cy Young had sort of like fallen into Robbie Ray's lap after Cole was not great, he went and just neither of them wants it at this point, apparently.
It is actually a pretty bad, and again, this is not necessarily popular opinion because I know listeners of this podcast want to see Robbie Ray win the Cy Young. For what it's worth, I think he will. I still would probably give my vote to Gerrit Cole. We don't have to go down that road again because I'm established on that. but it is not a good year for the AL Cy Young. Like, the performances that Ray and Cole have put up have been good performances, but in other years they would not be Cy Young performances. And in the National League, if you look at, you know, what Corbin Burnes has done, you know, obviously he didn't make it through the season healthy and wasn't a candidate, but, you know, what DeGrom was doing when he was healthy, what Zach Wheeler's been able to do, like, the AL does not have a particularly good, you know, Ray could win this with a sub-4 war by Fangraphs, and we can debate what the right war to use is and yada yada yada. And just being that guy, I've got a piece on that too. I just put one out on the kind of Cole Ray comparison. But to see a guy with, you know, kind of a FIP in the high mid-3s win the Cy Young is a bit jarring, especially because it's not some year where offense is just taken off or anything. It's just no one in the AL has kind of reached that level of dominance you'd expect.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, health is another thing. Like, Rodon's pitched so well, but missed a bunch of time, and you know, the post-pandemic year, maybe that's a factor that guys just haven't been as healthy. But yeah, no, I mean, Jose Berríos is going to get votes, and he's been great, but it is jarring. And I think that, you know, I mean, this is sort of typical of any recent year, but, like, I don't know if Ray overtook Berríos now for the lead in innings pitched, but they're both finishing underneath 200, which, you know, those guys are rare and rarer, but it wasn't that long ago that, you know, you at least get a few or at least get a couple. But yeah, that durability and the third time through the lineup thing, you know, most teams seem to recognize that's dangerous waters to play in. But most teams have a bullpen that's not four guys. So
yeah, it's four guys, but then that often means on a particular day it's two guys.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to have, you know, you like to have six or seven guys. You can have one guy who's absolute garbage, who's like a rule five, maybe not Luciano garbage, but like really, really quite bad, who you're hoping to develop for the future. I can accept holding one bullpen spot for total low leverage because there's some development reason. But generally speaking, it's good to have six or seven guys with some level of competence, which is, I think, a lesson that they may learn heading into 2022.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I don't advocate being like the Rays in a lot of ways, but they have like, it feels like they have 15 guys that they, you know, they get rid of them all when they when they become arbitration eligible, and they just have guys with, you know, when they lose, when they're out of options, because they want to just churn through them and, you know, pitch them until their arms fall off and then bring up another clone. And that's you know, that is a poor way as a human to like construct a for a labor force as part of your organization, but also it is an effective baseball strategy that's tough to reconcile, but they're very good at what they do, sadly.
The difference between the Rays and the Blue Jays is that if, like, the Rays, Ty Tice and Kirby Snead is good. You know what I mean? Like, the guy yeah. that's just kind of hanging out in AAA, and, like, those guys who you're like, oh, we'll throw it at the wall and see if it works. Like, they're, you know, they've got a sub-3 ERA at Buffalo. Maybe it'll work out. Like, those guys for the Rays are just, like, come up and they're incredible. And then they can trade them for someone else who's even better somehow. And I don't know if the Jays are going to figure that out. I think it's probably more likely that they might come to the conclusion they're going to throw some money at that problem, which is probably wise. And they came close to doing that with Liam Hendricks. I guess we don't know exactly, you know, where their offer landed compared to the White Sox, but the fact they had a significant interest in Hendricks and that they actually did get Kirby Yates, which is something that's so easy to forget.
Yeah, they did after he failed his physical with Atlanta, but yes.
Yeah.
maybe a red flag, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they'll do that again. If I had to guess on like things that the Blue Jays will learn from 2021, I don't think they're going to spend this offseason signing guys who failed their physicals. Maybe that's overly optimistic on my part.
Yeah, no, I think, well, and I think that's the Rays example is right. You know, the Jays at the big league level have done very well with guys, you know, on small deals, on minor league deals with an invite, that sort of thing. And they, you know, they put together some names this year that just really, you know, it's not just Yates, you know, Chatwood looked real good for a month and then was awful. Brad Hand, everybody knows how terrible that was. David Phelps got hurt. Soria has been, you know, not the guy that they expected. You know, they tried to sort of cobble it together this year, and if like even a couple of those guys, or even one more guy, had worked out, or if Pearson had established himself, you know, a little bit sooner than it seems like he is now as the guy that we thought he could be in the bullpen, these last very crucial, you know, this run of 10 games or whatever where they've lost more than they should have, could have been different. And sadly not, but yeah, I throwing money at the problem, that's money I want to see go to Marcus Semien, as I always say it wrong, because it's Semien, and Robbie Ray as well, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm operating from a world where they can do both of those things, which I know that they can. Whether they will is another issue. Yeah, it is, you know, we're talking about these incredibly thin margins, right? And it is thin enough that you can say with some level of confidence, like, if X reliever was decent, we'd probably be in a different spot. Or if they could have gotten, you know, this is a bit of a silly one, because I actually don't think that highly of him as a pitcher. But if David Phelps had been healthy, like, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's worth a game. And we're a game back now, right? Yeah. Like, that's how close it is. And so it is a bit unfortunate that type of agonizing needs to go on. Now, again, we're speaking from a moment where things are kind of as dark and as close to the end as you're going to have. So, you know, this weekend could go a very different way. Like, I remember earlier in the season, right, we talked about that series with Oakland. And if Oakland came into Toronto and just bombed them, Toronto is essentially going to be out of the wild card race. It's quite a long time ago we said that. We thought that, you know, the meaningful baseball thing could be totally over. And we talked about that completely genuinely. And I think we were coming from an honest place. I don't think we were overly pessimistic. That was kind of the situation that they were in. And so we are now speaking again from one of these negative places. And it's conceivable that if you're listening to this podcast, you know, next Monday or on Sunday at 8 p.m. I don't know what your schedule is, listener. It's possible that this podcast sounds pretty absurd because the Blue Jays have swept the Orioles and the Red Sox continued to fumble their way down the stretch. And the Blue Jays have lined up a date with Gerrit Cole, a guy that they've been pummeling for the last couple of times they've had a chance. And the whole kind of navel gazing on what might have gone differently is pretty silly. But, you know, the stats would say that there's an 87% chance that it's not silly at all.
That's true. But also, yes, well, we will have many months to dissect all the various ways that the Jays could have got that extra game, which will be an agonizing thing not a task I look forward to. But
months of agony, listener, please tune in, subscribe, like the podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Fascinating offseason, really, because of who they're losing and you know what they have and how much financial flexibility they should have, and then also you know whatever the hell happens with the CBA. But again, we have many months to talk about that.
Well, for a team that is as good as the Blue Jays, and whatever happens, you know, over the next few days, this is a good team. They're going to be, I think, you know, there's obviously the possibility that they re-sign Ray and Semien. I think that that's unlikely, very unlikely they get both. I'm not sure they're going to get one. It's going to be, but they do have a lot of money to spend. So it's going to be a good team, but a good team that looks very different, which is kind of unusual because normally a good team heads into the offseason and kind of makes one ad, or they're looking to promote their prospects, or they make flip one major trade or something. It's going to be kind of, this is going to be a comparison that might be a bit jarring. It's going to be kind of like the Padres of the previous offseason, where they were a good team coming into the offseason before this year, but they remade themselves significantly anyway. And I think that's going to happen with the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays are going to be remade significantly in 2022. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be better. The guys they're losing are pretty ridiculously good, potentially. But it's going to be, I know, I remember a lot of Blue Jays offseasons going in thinking, hey, they're going to, you know, get a couple relievers and a bench guy. Right. And that ain't what we're looking at. So that is, you know, from an entertainment value perspective, for the content, as people say, I think it's going to be a good offseason.
Yeah, and I think next year, you know, Barrios, Manoa, Pearson, Syndergaard, Ryu, I think that's a good rotation. I think it's going to be good for them.
It's kind of in that vein. I wanted to play a bit of a game. I don't know if this is a game. It maybe needs more rules to be a game. Anyway, a something with you. Mm-hmm. Because Sunday is the last, you know, the last game of the regular season. Chances are it's the last game the Blue Jays play this year. As we said, not a guarantee. So I wanted to ask you, yes or no, whether the following players are the last, is it their last game as a Blue Jay? So some of these are free agents, and then some of these are other roster players. The free agents are the obvious ones to ask, but also, you know, no guarantee. So I just want to go down the line. We'll start with Semien. Mm-hmm. Yes or no, last game as a Blue Jay?
Probably yes.
Yeah.
I'd rather that not be true, but I mean, just the odds are definitely, there's going to be a lot of teams out there looking for him and not necessarily looking for a middle infielder in the tier of, you know, the young guys who are going to cost, you know, twice as much or several dozen million dollars more or whatever it is.
I also, the shortstop thing has been eating away at me for most of the season, and then he was pretty explicit about it when asked about kind of the second base record stuff, bringing that right into the front of the public consciousness. So he's the one I feel pretty confident on. No. Okay. I was going to say Robbie Ray, but no, we'll save him for later. Let's say...
The other thing I will say, you know, about Semien, really got to get that straight. But maybe I don't, because maybe he's got three games left. Yeah. But you know what? I forget what I was about to say. So we can move on.
All right. This is...
Oh, you know what? No, I do know what I was going to say. I mean, I think somebody's going to pay for his best year. It's probably the thing.
Yeah, and so I think...
I can understand the Jays maybe not wanting to be that team.
He's also, I think, one of those guys who might get that, you know, well-respected, good clubhouse guy, this is exactly the culture person we want to bring in type of premium. He's actually, I think he might be a good fit for one of those teams who wants to buy a year early. went on their competitive window because he could be sort of a tone setter, which is interesting to say because I think the impression I get in the Blue Jays clubhouse is he's a little bit more of a, I wouldn't say non-entity is unfair, but like quite quiet in the context of this boisterous group of players. But yeah, I do
leads by example.
Yeah, but I think he is maybe a guy that you bring in a year ahead of when you're really ready and the young players can see him as a, yeah, he's a great lead by example type of guy.
So I did see somebody suggesting he would be a great fit for Boston the other day.
Yeah, a lot of Yankees fans
do have a shortstop.
Are getting attached as well, I'm noticing.
So I would, if I were the Jays, I would overpay just to stop that from happening.
Okay, number two. I think this is pretty simple. Corey Dickerson. Do you think Corey Dickerson has any utility or last game as a Blue Jay?
See, he's one I might say no. I think they really like Dickerson. And I, you know, that was, I think Ben Nicholson Smith had it when the trade happened, like that they had been trying to get him in the off season, and it's a, he's been a guy that they've targeted. I mean, all it took was them to offer Joe Panik apparently, and also get Adam Simber in the deal. Like, that's such a ridiculous trade to look back on. But he, I don't know. He's a guy who, you know, we saw the at bat last night, a couple good at bats last night on Friday. You know, the choking up. He's a guy from the left side who just does something that's a little different. I know diversifying the offense is a thing that Jays are kind of big on. He's a guy who I could see them looking into bringing back.
Yeah, I find myself agreeing with that. I don't know how long ago I would have said this is an obvious no, but he has been a little bit impressive lately. And not impressive is the wrong word almost, because it's not like he's hitting bombs or doing anything dramatic. But he's quite solid across the board. He doesn't strike out that much. He makes decent contact. His fielding is actually all right. Like, he, you know, you don't want him in center. I think they'd be happy for him to not play center ever again. But he didn't embarrass himself either. Like, he moves fairly well. And I also think he's not a player that other teams are going to be inclined to pay. I don't think he's going to hit free agency and people are going to be like, oh, that's my corner outfield solution, Corey Dickerson. So I think they could get him on kind of a hybrid bench player, but plays a decent amount because he's left-handed type of contract. And it would not shock me if he's back.
I wouldn't hate it, depending on, you know, all of the other moves that they make.
This is the silliest one. Gerard Dyson. It's been great. It's been fun.
I don't think he will like play for the Blue Jays next spring, but you know, maybe they'll bring him back at the end of next year or something. Maybe I wouldn't rule out the possibility, but I'll go with the no.
Yeah, I feel like if you want someone to be Dalton Pompey, you've got to have like one super fast guy in your minor somewhere, and you can just do that if you really want.
That was kind of weird that, you know,
they outsource that to a guy deep into his 30s. Yeah, a bit weird. Yeah. Steven Matz.
I think, you know, there was a time in August when he had a great month. I was looking at this yesterday. I don't know if it was in yesterday's piece or today's, but Matz has an ERA above 4 in every month except August, and that's really like making his numbers shine. I mean, 4 is not, you know, obviously, as we were talking about, Cy Young guys are in the mid 3s, or at least their FIP is. You know, that's not the worst thing in the world in the AL. And I think he's got some positives, and it could be a factor of, I don't know if he's a Pete Walker guy as much as Ray seemed to be, but like that vibe doesn't sort of emanate from the TV, but obviously that's all I can base it on. But you know, his success has been sort of, it has come and gone this year. I could see him being a guy that they look to bring back. It's going to, the rotation is going to be very interesting. Obviously there's that big hole with Ray. There'll be, you know, Stripling is still around, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which month, of the, which version of Stripling, the Jays are going to get. He's probably still more of a bullpen guy. You know, it's real easy after the last couple performances to dream on Nate Pearson going back into the rotation. I mean, he won't be, max effort throwing 100, which is potentially a problem. But there's still, and you know, you hear the old schoolist of old school Pat Tabler being like, you know, I walked by him and it just that he, that's just, you'd never see a pitcher body like that. Like in the Blue Jays, like he's got the good face and he looks like a pitcher. And that's, I think that's hard to shake. And I think that is going to keep him being in the frontline starter potential plans.
Definitely a better face than Steven Matz. No debate.
Fair. But so I'll say no on Mats, but it wouldn't shock me if they brought him back, I guess, is where I'm rambling to.
I would say no. And the reason I'd say no is not because there's anything wrong with having Mats in your rotation. I think Mats is actually a fine, I think he's a very good five, because fives barely exist, as we talk about all the time with the way pitchers get injured and whatnot. I think he's a okay four as well. The thing is, there are just a lot of guys that reside in that tier approximately. And I think the Blue Jays are just going to go for whoever in that nebulous kind of okay tier is the best value. And so is there a chance Mats is demands contract-wise fall into that, you know, most value? Yeah, but there's so many other guys that are in that area that I have a hard time, you know, specifically nailing down that Mats is going to be that guy. I think they want to shop for a type of pitcher there, as opposed to like Mats is just not a guy you zero in on. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it's going to be interesting just with opportunity. Right. I mean, because you can only sell guys on taking your money, you know, only so many of them. Right. You can't go and get like four or five guys when you already have, you know, three spots at least locked down. And you do, like I say, kind of want Pearson to sneak in. You probably do. So they're limited in what they're going to be able to do. So I don't know if Mats fits that, or if they might even want to go, you know, below a tier below, and sort of, you know, get not in, if not Ray, get some, you know, get a number one kind of guy, or a front of the rotation kind of guy, and then spend your money on lesser guys who will take smaller roles, and you know, among them will provide you depth and a five somewhere out of there.
Yeah, you might have that situation where you're like, we're coming into spring training and here are the four guys that are going to compete for the five spot, and it's going to include Stripling and it's going to include Thomas Hatch somehow, and then it's going to include some lesser free agent signing. I could see that being the case. The last guy on the list is obviously Robbie Ray. Is he coming back?
Unfinished business, man, yeah. I don't know. I think... I'm inclined to say no. I don't want to say no on him or Semien, but I'm going to say yes on Robbie Ray. I think I just think that this is a good fit for him. It seems obviously this year has been great, but I wonder how worried the Jays are that it is, you know, it's just gone so well that it's not, as we saw, you know, I'm not trying to color my opinion of Robbie Ray based on one start, but, you know, there are still some Robbie Ray things that go on with him, even though, you know, he's found his command. And I think he can be really, really effective. I don't think you want to pay for best pitcher in the AL, you know, expecting that going forward. But I could see them definitely bringing him back.
Yeah, I think that this is probably the worst conceivable time to invest in Robbie Ray from a value perspective.
Yeah.
I could.
Well, you already got the best possible time to invest in it, which was last year. So
I think there. I don't know. The easy thing is always to say no, for the same reason that there's a lot of different guys available, and is he going to be the one they see the most value in? But that's boring at a certain point. So I'll say yes as well. Like you said, he likes it with Toronto. He likes it with Pete Walker. They like him. They let him do a pretty unconventional thing, and it's gone well for all parties involved. So. And they got money to spend, and they're going to want another starter who's at least middle rotation. So let's say yes.
I think the other thing is, though, you know, there's Berríos, who only has 1 year left before he hits free agency. And if you're having to spend money between the two, I think you take Berríos.
Oh, yeah, I think that you would want to sign Berríos too. I guess that the...
It shouldn't have to be either or.
It shouldn't have to be either or. And I think the thought would be that Ryu is coming off the books kind of by the time that those are really getting. I mean, there'll be that one overlap year of 2023 where you'd have those two and Ryu on the books. And that would be pretty heavy for the rotation. But I think maybe you could stomach that with the knowledge that Ryu was coming off the books the next year, and then hopefully have some young pitchers to fill that gap a little bit. Although... young starters in the Blue Jays system, maybe not that many of them that you would count on. Bonus possibilities, guys who are under contract through next year, but could it be their last game as a Blue Jay? Gurriel Jr., we talked about this before. I know that he ended so strongly, but there still issues with his fit defensively, how that limits the team. Is he a good enough hitter to justify some of his fielding quirks, the fact that he plays a non-premium position, also just the fact that his contract has a lot of value on the trade market and you could maybe use it to solve some other problems elsewhere. This sounds, again, this is the most absurd time to say that because of what we've seen from him in September, but if you look at him over the course of the whole year, you know, he wasn't a crazy valuable player, and I could see them wanting to kind of clear those corners a little bit.
Yeah, I think that that's, I mean, that's always sort of been in the back of my mind, and the you know, the fit and the lineup diversification, you know, the easy thing to do is to move him out, I think, because, like you say, the contract is so valuable on the trade market. But obviously, you know, we saw, and this is a thing he's done a bunch, you know, I think every year he'll have a streak, and the fact that it happened sort of at the end of this year almost leads you to believe that it's going to be, you know, oh, well, now that's a new normal kind of a thing. You know, if it had happened in the middle of the year and then he sucked from in September, you'd have different thoughts, I think. But yeah, I think they also, obviously, they care and pay attention to culture a lot. He's obviously a guy that fits with what they're doing, is a beloved teammate. I don't know if that's enough to keep a guy around. It depends, I guess, obviously, on which problems and how well trading him solves it. But I think that's got to be on the table. And I think that's, you know, that's the thing that Jays fans, and again, there's still three games left. They still could be in the playoffs. We're doing this a little prematurely, but, you know, that's something we're going to have to think about and sort of grapple with in the offseason, is that this could look like a very different team. And like you say, a very good team still, but a very different looking team next year. So I think maybe still yes on him, but it would not surprise me if it's a no.
Yeah, I think my gut feeling is that he's still around, but it's a question that if I'm the Blue Jays front office, I'm definitely asking myself, can I use this piece to solve some problems elsewhere? For example, if they think they can use Gurriel and something else to get a decent pitcher and then not spend the money on pitchers and then use that money on infield, yada, yada, yada. Okay, this is just wish casting for the Blue Jays fan base who hates him so much.
Sadly, Grichuk
but
will still
Randall
be
Grichuk, have to mention him. Is there a point? Is there a cut bait point with Grichuk? I actually liked some of the things he did in 2020. He was cutting down his swing a little bit, and he was doing that through the beginning of 2021, and I had some mild optimism. But then it's just been a tire fire since that time. 2019 was brutal as well. It's not like you make tons of money, but he makes enough money that you can't trade him.
That's the thing.
But is he worth, you know, is he worth a roster spot? I guess the reality is that he is, because he's a better fourth outfielder than a lot of teams' fourth outfielders in theory. I just wonder if there's a chance where they're just like, this is not a good situation for anybody. Maybe we just move on. But I don't think it's so.
I think they liked him enough to give him that contract. He's obviously not lived up to it. It's not a huge burden. There's only a couple of years left after this one, which is still a long time, but the cut bait point is maybe still a year away, which means having to roster him next year if they can't move him. I think moving him, yeah, is going to be tough. It's like you're eating money and maybe giving up a guy you don't want to give up just to get somebody to take most of the contract. That's, you know, not... You have to weigh that between, you know, what you lose by having him on the roster, which I think that they probably like him enough that that's not going to happen. The one scenario, you know, that we could all cross our fingers on, and maybe depending on how you think about whether this should be in the CBA or not, is like if a salary floor comes in, then Randall Grichuk becomes real interesting to a lot of teams, I think.
He's a great NBA trade chip, to be honest. Yeah. Like if this were the NBA, like Randall Grichuk would be immensely valuable for putting together a trade package. In baseball, not so much.
You know, and maybe, you know, maybe Shapiro and Atkins saw that coming. Maybe the maybe that's what that was the whole point of the deal. I don't think so.
That'd be a hell of a 3D chess move. I'd tip my hat to that. That would be pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. But I mean, and I don't know what's possible or what's not in the CBA stuff, but I know that there have been many, you know, many ideas floated. Not necessarily by the parties involved, but just by observers. And that's one that's out there, the potential of a salary floor. I don't know if the MLB I think they did. I think that was one of the things.
Yeah, MLB was trying to use that as like a supposed concession to push a more punitive luxury tax. And I just don't think the players were interested in that at all.
They're like, oh, the luxury tax that is a de facto salary cap? Yeah, no thanks. But yeah, I think he'll probably still be around. I don't, he's not a guy where you're going to eat what's left on the deal just yet. I think that he can play some defense. He can, he can take that. He could be the right-handed Corey Dickerson for you, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Last one is I don't know. Maybe it's an easy one. Just one of the catchers is one of the catch. So I guess the soft, uninteresting version of this is that Reese McGuire is somehow gone. The more intriguing version is that Alejandro Kirk is part of a trade, used as a trade trip. I think Danny Jansen is around kind of no matter what happens. Is this the last time we see one of these catchers in a Blue Jays uniform?
Maybe both, honestly. Maybe McGuire is more likely to stick around than Kirk. They like Kirk. I like Kirk. Everybody likes Kirk. But the industry is just catching up on what the Blue Jays have always liked about Gabriel Moreno, right? And he's made it to AAA now. He's, a top 10 prospect by a lot of folks at this point already. He didn't do it for very long because he broke his thumb in July, maybe even June. Like he missed a lot of the season. But he looked so good in AA. And he's a guy that the Jays, he's definitely going to be in the big league camp. I don't know about the service time stuff. Like they'll probably send him to AAA at some point, which is why I say maybe McGuire sticks around and is sort of the placeholder. But yeah, if I'm the Jays, as much as Kirk is a delight and as much as they, sent a guy, the team nutritionist to help him eat better and get in better condition last year, they've obviously invested a lot of resources in him. That's not entirely selfless. He's still that helps him become a better asset on the trade market. And he's just a guy where I think, I would be perfectly happy going forward with him as a tandem with Danny Jansen, even though, they're not left right. But Moreno exists. And I think that's the one everybody is like, that's the guy you bet on. And that means that Kirk might have to go.
Yeah, I think I agree longer term. In the short term, I think they're, like you said, I think Moreno goes to AAA at least at the beginning of next year. There's no guarantee that he goes off there. I just think getting rid of Kirk until you're really, really sure that Moreno's the guy you're turning it over to is a bit premature. So I could see them moving Kirk in the right time. I think that time would be sometime during 2022. So I am going to say that Kirk is seen again after Sunday, presuming the Blue Jays don't make the playoffs.
That's fair. And it's very interesting what they're going to do with Moreno. Because he could, I think he could come up, but as a team that has aspirations to win next year, maybe breaking him in that way is not what you want to do, but also maybe breaking in a catcher, having him not catch your whole rotation until midway through the season isn't a great way to do it either. So it should be interesting. We'll see what he does in fall league too. I assume he's going to be one of those guys. And if he lights it up, then I think, the defense is not a concern there. So,
all right, before we wrap things up, we'll do a little weekend series preview. It is the season defining series part two, not because of who they're playing the Orioles. I do not have a lot of notes for this, I'm going to be perfectly honest, and that's because we all kind of know who the Orioles are. You have to sweep the series. The Orioles are very bad. They've got all lefty starters right now, so I think that means kind of a little bit of a Teoscar watch. He's sort of their big lefty masher. Gurriel Jr. too, if he's all right. Springer has been that way in his career, maybe kind of less so this year in particular. And then John Means is kind of a thing you have to be aware of on Saturday.
Less of a thing since the sticky stuff cracked down.
Less of a thing, but he was great before that, and then he was poor after that, and then he's been really good lately in September. So like a lot of the pitchers have seemingly had that pattern where they've adjusted or figured out a way to be sneakier, whatever the case may be. he's someone that is sort of the most likely character, I think, to put a big wrench in all of the Blue Jays' hopes and dreams. But that is not a guarantee by any means. Like, John Means at his best is not necessarily some unbelievable, untouchable ace. But, you know, compared to some of the pitchers, say, the Red Sox will see facing the Nationals or the Mariners will see facing the Angels, he might be the best pitcher that one of these teams faces this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. It could go all very awry for them. I mean, it should be fine. It's the Orioles. It's very interesting. I think every pitcher start. I don't know who's starting for the Orioles. It's still TBA on MLB's site. But Thomas Eshelman, who's a right-hander, is going to either start or get bulk innings. But if it's not him and they have a lefty, then I think all three, like the Mariners, Red Sox, and Yankees games will be started entirely by lefties, which is notable. Though not maybe necessarily interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, John Means is definitely the one to watch. And also the Orioles can hit a bit. Like, you know, not everybody, not up and down the lineup, but, you know, Mountcastle is decent. They've got some power there. And if the Jays are having one of those days where they have a little too often where, you know, nothing seems to be working offensively, a couple home runs can really put the screws to them, as we saw last night against the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think that they're going to bust out a little bit here offensively, and that's not...
Against the Orioles?
It's a hell of a hot take. No, I think that they're going to do it offensively. I think that it's going to happen. It's just a big scoreboard watching weekend. That's what we're looking at. You're really, you know, can one of the shit teams beat one of the better teams that you'd prefer would lose? I think a lot of it could come down to that. And it's, it's an anxious place to be. But, you know, thanks to the Orioles on Thursday night, the Blue Jays are in a situation where this is all still somehow. I don't think they necessarily even deserve it after the way they played against the Twins and Yankees. But somehow it's all still attainable. And it's all still, as you said, worth watching. And we will be tuning.
And Sunday, every game starting at 3 p.m. So...
Yeah.
Buckle up. Could be wild.
Yeah, it could be wild. So, so that's us for this week. We will talk to you guys later on. I'm sure we will be here to either look back on the season that was or look ahead at the playoffs to be, whatever the case may be with that. So we look forward to coming at you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.